Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning into another episode of Game Dev with Scruffy Fern. Today I've got a really fun topic and kind of a good rant that I want to go on. This is something that's been bothering me for a little while. So let's jump right into my Scruffy Fern rant. And the rant today is game programmers are programmers. In fact, I'm going to take that one step further. Programmers are programmers. I have so many times that people have come up to me and said, oh, you're a game programmer. Well, I work in web development, and you might not understand a little bit of that stuff. And that's not really the case. A lot of game developers don't start out as game developers. They start out as web programmers or back-end specialists, and then they move into game development. So when you hear the term game programmer, just drop the game part and think of this person as a programmer. In fact, my special guest today, Anome, is a game developer, but you didn't start out that way. In fact, you started out working with nuclear research, I believe?
Yeah, I worked at a nuclear consulting company, and I helped develop robots for next generation inspection and repair.
Yeah, so that's pretty far away from game development when you think of it, right? That's a pretty, kind of almost a polar opposite if you think about it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I'm trying to get at is there's game programmers out there that can do a lot more than just build games, right?
Absolutely.
Another thing that I always like to mention, and like I love this little meme here, because programmers are programmers, right?
Yeah.
And one thing that I have always said is when you have that cross-discipline, when you come from that field of nuclear research and now you're working on game development, those points where those intersections happen are actually where the ideas come from, right? You bring something new to the table that a lot of other developers might not have. So that's one reason I always stress to game developers, broaden your horizons, work on other projects, right? Try building a website or build a server for your game or something like that. Try these different things because you're going to actually expand your knowledge base, and that's where the ideas are going to start firing off, right? You might be working on something like a back-end server and find a really cool way to do something and go, oh, wait a minute, I can actually implement that in a game that I'm building. And now all of a sudden, you see that cross-pollination, right?
Yeah, I fully agree. I think mixing disciplines is a really important step in, boosting your creativity. Learning how to work with other things, hardware, servers, and whatnot. I think understanding that is important to expanding your skills as a game developer.
Yeah, once you understand data structures and basically how to program it, the languages, the syntax, the hardware that is running the code really doesn't mean anything, right? As long as you understand the principles of development and programming, you can pretty much work with anything.
Yeah.
So don't lock yourself to one discipline, mess around with other things. And in fact, that kind of is a good segue into what we're doing because we were talking a little bit about hardware and the Internet of Things. Right? This is a really, really big buzzword lately. Everyone's talking about the Internet of Things. So what is the Internet of Things? A kind of a clinical way of putting it, or like the definition is, it's a group of systems or objects that work together to add value to the underlying system. That kind of sounds really weird. But basically what it is it's an object that talks to another object, probably through the Internet, to actually add a layer of productivity or add something extra to that already existing device.
Yeah, or like new ways of interacting with everyday objects that you never really thought of before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a pretty big buzzword. A lot of people throw it around for pretty much anything that's got an internet connection and could run code, right? They're basically, it's an Internet of Things.
Yeah.
The definition is a little gray. And as we move forward into this, it's a new field, right? As we move forward into it, I think we'll kind of lock down that definition a little bit more and like that. So some examples of what IoT could be, right? And a good example of adding something and making something better is the wearable watches, right? So if you have a standard watch, obviously you can't run applications or what it might be. So if I add the Internet of Things to it and I make it internet enabled and I make it be able to run apps or take data from my phone, now all of a sudden I've added an extra layer to this device and made it more useful. Right, so that's the Internet of Things approach to the phone, to the watch. You can do that with things like you got the Nest there, which is the thermometer that you can control via an app or whatnot, and that's an Internet of Thing, right? Now that might not have a network Wi-Fi connection, might be Bluetooth, but it is connected to another device and taking data from that device. So that's why we can classify that as an Internet of Things. Another big market is the set-top boxes. You see a lot of these now, right? These boxes that all are stream games, you know, like us gamers probably played around with that a little bit, right? You've got different set-top boxes out there that allow you to stream from your consoles or maybe, you know, even the Miracast stuff, right? Mm-hmm. These are all forms of the Internet of Things, right? So there's a lot of room out there to kind of play with in this field. I know you've experienced a little bit with that, and we're going to kind of show off a really cool demo later on. I'm excited to see that. But yeah, so this is basically what is the Internet of Things, what you can play with, what kind of devices are out there, right? Like, you know, healthcare is huge, right, with a Fitbit and the Microsoft Band and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So definitely take a look around. I'm sure there's a device you've got sitting on your table or in your office somewhere that is considered an Internet of Things device. So yeah, play around with it and take a look for ways to gamify it, right? You know, bringing it back full circle to gaming. How can we gamify these things? One that I've personally been working on was with my Fitbit. I thought, well, this is kind of cool. I'm tracking my steps. Well, how can I use that in a meaningful way for gamers? Well, I built an RPG that only lets you walk how many steps you actually took in real life. So if you want to travel from town to town, you have to have actually taken the steps in your day-to-day life. And then I use the API to call back and check and see if you've got enough steps, and I can move the character.
Oh, it's a really interesting application.
Right, just little things like that. It's not very complicated, right? It's a standard use of their API. They let you pull down how many steps, and I'm just turning it into a way that I can use it inside of gaming.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool.
Yeah, excellent.
So when we talk about Internet of Things, one of the things that comes to mind right away is the Maker boards, right? So these are little boards that basically a PC on a board. Right, or a computer on a board. I shouldn't say PC, that's kind of limiting. A computer on a board. And these basically, you know, allow you to prototype and build these devices and write code to them and interact with sensors and a whole whack of different devices out there. So a couple that I got here, obviously the Arduino, if you're familiar with this space, you've probably heard the term Arduino. It's a pretty popular one.
Very popular.
The one below it, there's the Netduino, which is compatible with all the Arduino shields. And a shield is basically something that you put on. We'll show you that momentarily. It's all compatible with all the Arduino pieces. It just runs .NET instead of the Linux distribution that Arduino is running. I think it's Linux that Arduino's running, isn't it?
No, I think it's, I don't know what it is, but I think it's like a custom.
Oh, it's a custom build?
Yeah.
And this is why I have an expert with me.
Wow.
So he can clarify me. But yeah, so, you know, it's compatible with all that. So similar coding base and stuff like that. You can still use the sketchpad and stuff.
Yeah.
Then you have the Raspberry Pi, which is in the middle there. Very, very popular device. The one thing that stands out about the Raspberry Pi is onboard sound, onboard video, and multiple USB. Right, so most of these devices, you know, if you look at the Arduino there, it does have either a network or USB input, but not multiples, right? Whereas the Raspberry Pi allows you to plug in multiple devices. And in fact, if you put it inside of a case, you can plug it into a TV and turn it into a set-top box pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think the key difference with the Raspberry Pi is that it is as close as you get to a full-featured PC and something the size of a credit card, you know?
Yeah.
Without requiring any additional, like you could just get this, plug it into power and connect, you know, a video out and a keyboard and start running it with, mm-hmm. You know, with your Linux distro.
A lot of my friends have done that. You know, for gamers out there, MAME is a very popular emulator for the arcade systems. And a lot of my friends have bought Raspberry Pis and turned them into MAME systems that they plug into their TV and stuff, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing that something the size of a credit card can basically do what used to take a room full of equipment, right? So. Pretty impressive.
It's a very cool device.
Yeah, and then beside that we have the Galileo. The Galileo is kind of a newer board to the market. The Galileo 2, Gen 2 is out now. And the big difference between this as opposed to the rest of them is it's an x86 processor. So a lot of the other ones are running an ARM processor or might be PowerPC depending on what you've got out there. But this is actually running x86. So you can pretty much compile and run C++ code like you would for your x86 processor in your computer and run it on this Galileo board.
Yeah, and you said you can get Windows running on it.
Yes, in fact, we'll show you guys a little bit in the demos, but I've actually got Windows 8.1 running on the Galileo board.
So is that a full x86 version of Windows 8.1 running on the board?
Yeah, it doesn't have the GUI or anything.
Yeah.
It's just basically command line, but the .NET core and everything's all there for you. So.
Wow.
Yeah, very, very powerful, very useful. I love it personally. It's my favorite board. So.
Yeah.
So a little bit about what Microsoft's doing with all this Internet of Things. Now, if you probably have been paying attention to the feeds on Twitter and stuff, you've seen recently that Microsoft announced that the new Raspberry Pi 2 will be capable of running Windows 10. That's pretty amazing, that was a right?
That was a huge announcement.
Yeah, when I saw that, I pre-ordered a Raspberry 2 that second. I was just like, click, and I ordered one. I wish I would have had it in order to show you guys today. Unfortunately, it didn't show up yet, so maybe we'll come back and visit that in a later show. But yeah, very, very cool. It's going to be able to run the full version of Windows 10, which is awesome. Okay. I'm looking forward to that, being able to have like that little tiny credit card size set-top box that's running Windows 10.
Yeah, that would be very, very exciting. Especially, so I guess, I don't know if you can discuss this yet, but can you run, like, can you compile and run, like, you know, full WinRT apps on?
I'm not 100% sure. I haven't actually got my hands on it yet. Okay. I don't even know if the image is available live yet online.
No, I
haven't seen it yet. Last I checked, it wasn't. So yeah. I'm not 100% sure, and I don't really want to speculate until I've actually dove into it. But
fair enough.
Yeah, I'm hoping, like you, that it will be a little bit more open and be able to run those full programs that we're used to, right?
Yeah, because that'd be cool. Imagine, you know, you build an app for the phone or Surface or tablet, and you can compile that same app and run it on a board. You know?
Well, that's what we're going with universal apps, right? Yeah. We've been touting this for a long time. Microsoft's been saying, you know, build once, deploy everywhere, and that's becoming a reality in Windows 10, yeah. Right? It's no longer just this dream and kind of there, not really formulated fully, but now it really is, right? So it's the build once, deploy everywhere, and yeah, I'm totally on board. I completely agree with you. If we can get the Raspberry Pi as one of those build once, deploy to products, I think that would be great.
Yeah.
Awesome. So a little bit more about what Windows is doing. So, or Microsoft rather is doing. We have the Windows Developer Program for IoT. This is a site, and I'm not showing the links later. I'll give you guys one link so you don't have to hunt down a bunch of different websites. But this website basically has a bunch of samples and tutorials to get you started with IoT. So right now it's geared towards the Galileo board because that's the one that generally is used on the site, but there will be Raspberry Pi stuff coming in the near future. So very, very cool stuff, you know, walks you through setting up your board, how to implement Visual Studio, which we'll go into a little bit more detail here, as well as give you some ideas of like where to go to next and kind of connect you to a community that's already working on this stuff, right? So, that's one giant benefit is joining the community and chatting with them and seeing what other people are doing. The maker community in general is so varied what everybody's doing, right? Like, it's good to reach out to them and see, like, what are the examples that they're doing? Is there something that I can help build off of, right? Can I join your project? Yeah. I always love doing that, jumping in every once in a while and being able to build off of something that somebody's already created. Yeah. So you're not just sitting there if you're like, I've got this board, all these sensors, I don't really know what to do. Yeah. Jump onto the site and take a look and see what other people have done. Take a look at some of the walkthroughs and samples and kind of give yourself an idea of where to start. Because I was like that when I got the box full of servo motors and stuff. I'm like, I have no idea what I'm going to do with all this. It looks really cool, but you need that jumping off point.
Yeah.
And I think that this site is a great example for that.
Yeah, and the cool thing about the maker community is that people are really open and everybody wants to help.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're brand new to this space, it's really not hard to get involved at all. It's not intimidating.
Yeah, and everyone's very accepting, right? It's a hacker community,
exactly.
Right? People are very open, you know, different skill sets. You don't have to come in there knowing everything about IoT,
no.
Right? Like, there are people who are gonna be willing to help you and learn. And again, it goes back to our multidiscipline thing, right? You're gonna bring skills to the table that other people might not have. So you're able to teach other people and learn from other people. So very, very cool. I love the community. It's a great community. Okay, so let's dive right in. I'm going to go into a little demo here. I'm going to go in and show you how to do like the Hello World with the Galileo board, which is actually pretty simple and easy to do. I'm not going to walk you through the slides. These are all PowerPoint by death stuff. So, death by PowerPoint rather. So I'll make this available on the website so that you can kind of walk through it step by step. But we'll jump right over and get started with Visual Studio. So I'm just going to launch a Visual Studio. Visual Studio 2013 is what I'm using. You could use 2015 preview if you wanted to. It doesn't really make too much of a difference at this point. What I've done is I've installed the Windows Developer Program for IoT .msi file, which I will provide a link for you later on.
Sorry, one thing to add to that. If the link doesn't work for you, you make sure you have to create an account on the Microsoft Connect website and sign the end user license agreement.
Yeah, you have to go through all the steps. You can't just kind of like go right to the download.
I did that.
Did you try doing that?
Yeah, no.
You have to accept the license agreements and everything.
Yeah.
So just go through the steps. When you go to the website there, the Windows Developer Program site, it actually says, you know, sign up here, and then you can go through the steps, and they give you a download link at the end.
Yeah.
Awesome. So all that download really does is it basically adds a template to our Visual Studio to allow us to build Galileo apps. So just like building any other app, I'm going to go up to File. I'm going to go New. I'm going to select Project. And you'll notice now here in Visual Studio C++, yes, it's C++. I can hear the groaning through the camera right now. It is C++. It's not overly complicated code, so it's kind of a good way to get started with C++. But yeah, if you go down here in the dropdown for Visual Studio or Visual C++, you'll notice now I have Windows for IoT. And in there I have a Galileo wiring app, and I'm just going to select OK. Now when you install these this template, it's going to install a Galileo watcher down here in the corner, so I'm just going to pop that open. And what this does is it tells me all the Galileos that are connected to my network. I have a few here, but the one that I'm most interested in is my Galileo. And by default, that's the image that when you download, that's what it's called. You can change it if you wanted to. If you have a bunch of Galileos, like I have a bunch on here, you can give them different host names so that you can separate them. So that way, when you're pushing to them, you can just call them by name.
So the Galileo, after you follow the instructions that are posted in that getting started online, you connect it to your home network?
Yep.
Via Ethernet?
Yep.
Okay.
But yeah, I plugged it in via Ethernet, and all I'm doing is just connecting to it like I would remote into any other device.
Okay.
Right, so if it was like a laptop or anything. And what's cool about here with the Galileo Watcher is I can actually right-click on here, and I can telenet directly into the device. Here. So by default, the username is administrator, and the password is admin. And there you go. I'm actually inside, and you can see I'm running Windows version 6.3.9600 build, which is Windows 8.1. Yeah. And what's really important here, and I'm going to mention this now before we go a little bit further, is when you're using these, make sure you shut them down properly when they're running the Windows builds. If you don't, it's going to take a very long time next time you start it up. Because it's got to go through and check all the fragmented files and put everything back together. Yeah. So save yourself some trouble and just shut down the Galileo.
Yeah.
So do what I did here, telenet in, and the command's really simple. It's just shut down, and then slash /s.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that now because I'm actually going to use my Galileo. But if I do that, it'll actually shut down the Galileo, and you'll see a little light that says SD.
Yeah.
It'll stop blinking. As soon as that stops blinking, you can unplug your Galileo, and you won't have any problems in the future.
That's an important tip, because with boards like this, especially if you're used to using like an Arduino or something a little less feature-rich, it's really tempting to just pull the plug when you're done, because they're off.
Or your code doesn't work, and you're just like, and reset, right?
Yep.
I've done that a million times, and I'm not going to lie. I've burnt out 3 of the Galileo boards, 2 because I forgot that I had an aluminum desk, and 1 just because I yanked the cable at the wrong time.
Yeah.
Be careful. They are very high-tech hardware, right? So you got to be careful with that. Just good advice. Shut it down when you're not using it. All right. So let's go back into Visual Studio here. And I'm just going to open up the source code. So I'm just going to go into my main CPP. And this is basically the Hello World. It's already coded up for me. And this is going to make a light blink on and off. So can we zoom in on my Galileo board here? So my Galileo board here, I've got it connected to a breadboard with just a simple resistor. I think it's a 10K resistor and a light.
Mm-hmm.
And all I've done is I've connected the one side here that connects to my resistor to port 13 on my Galileo, which will allow me to talk to it via code. And then what I've done is I've created a loop so that I go to my resistor goes over here to my light. And basically acts like it's really hard to see. I know it's tiny. You will see in the slides that there is a really good example of it, how this is set up. But basically what happens is my resistor goes to the short lead
mm-hmm.
of my LED because these are polarized. You got to mm-hmm. make sure you've got them the right way. And then on the other side, on the long lead, I run another wire back to my board to my ground.
Mm-hmm.
So that completes the circuit,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. And so then what happens is I pass code in and I pass a voltage through that goes through my resistor mm-hmm. into my LED and turns my LED on,
mm-hmm.
right? That's all we're really doing. I know it sounds a little complicated, and when you start playing around with resistors and stuff, people get a little nervous. But yeah, it's very, very simple, very easy to set up, and this is basically your Hello World.
Yeah.
So now if I run my code here, you'll actually see the light is blinking, and it's just going to continue to blink on and off until I either pass new code to my Galileo or shut it down,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
right? Very cool. That's the Hello World.
Yeah. This is like the basic LED circuit, right? You've got the resistor in there to protect mm-hmm. the LED from burning itself out. And
yep.
it may look a little intimidating, but it really isn't if you just,
Yeah, and a fun little hack too is you can change the resistance of the resistor.
Yes,
like
you
put
can.
Different ones in there, and the light's going to get brighter or dimmer depending on how much resistance you put through there.
Yeah.
It's very cool. I love it. When I first got this working, I was like a little kid. I was just jumping up and down. I'm like, I got it working. I did hardware, right?
There's a special kind of thing that happens when you go from like, you know, writing code in here and seeing something in the real world actually react to the, you know,
yeah,
the commands that you're
sending. It's pretty amazing, yeah, that your code has now become part of the real world. It's a whole new level of development for me.
And so for game designers or game developers, can you imagine that, right, being able to design a game that, you know, behaves or does stuff on screen, you know, in the environment that we're familiar with, but also you can actually interact with the player in real physical ways too.
Mm-hmm.
That's also a special experience.
And this also opens up another avenue of controllers.
Yes.
You can build your own specialized controller for your game, right, that has some sort of specialized input that you might want to do. I was at an event a while ago, and I actually saw someone using buckets of water to control the player. You would put your hand in the bucket of water, and it would move them right or left, depending on what bucket you put your hand in. So I was just laughing my head off. And again, it was running with an Arduino connected. I think he was using Unity or whatever it was. And I was just amazed at like how cool he, you know, had taken this code and put it into the real world, and now you could actually play around with something physical and control a character in the world.
So you're really like opening yourself up to an infinite, you know, number of possibilities and things you can do in your games.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the usual controller interfaces. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah. And I'm not going to walk you through the code here because it is it's very, very simple. I kind of want to leave you guys to your own devices on that just so that you can kind of get a feel for the site and play around with it. But I didn't have to code anything and I got the LED blinking. So
before we move on, I'm just noticing as well that anyone who does have some familiarity with an Arduino, even if you just tried it out, you'll notice that the actual like the functions you're using, these are pretty much exactly the same as you would find in an Arduino sketch.
So. I'm up there on the screen, so I'm just going to highlight what you're talking about. This chunk of code is the exact same chunk of code that you would write in your Arduino sketch to run this code on an Arduino board.
Exactly.
Right. That's what I was saying about the compatibility between all these boards.
Yeah.
That's why there's that huge chunk of knowledge out there that you can take and put onto every single one of these boards.
Exactly. I think that's very cool that you can spend all your time working with an Arduino and then just, you know, looks like pretty much copy and paste a lot of your code.
There will be some differences,
obviously.
But when you get down to the bare bones of it all, it pretty much is very similar.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Very, very cool. Okay, now blinking lights are pretty cool, like fairly cool. We have something even better. So a colleague of mine, Sergey, he has put together a pile of blog posts about IoT and getting started. In fact, he walks you through that little demo I did there with the light. He actually walks you through those steps on his blog post. And again, link will come at the end. He did a really cool one where he took a weather board, which is basically has a humidity sensor, an altitude sensor, and a temperature sensor on it. And he hooked that up to this board, and then he connected it to an LCD and was actually printing out the altitude and all the information he was getting from the board. So I replicated this so that I could actually show you guys. So I'm going to, if let me zoom in here a little bit. So you can see right here, the difference between the two boards is pretty clear right off the bat. This is what I mentioned before, shields. This is what a shield is. This is basically a set of sensors put in a certain form factor that we can then clip on top of our boards. So Arduino made this very, very popular. Netduino has it. Pretty much all the maker boards have this functionality. Mm-hmm. And more so, more or less, a lot of them are going with the Arduino format. So this matches the Arduino format, which means that all these pins line up with what you would get on the Arduino board, which means most of the Arduino shields that you can purchase will work with the Intel Galileo board.
That's very
so
cool.
This is actually an Arduino shield purchased from SparkFun that we're running on a Galileo board, no problem. Same thing with this LCD. This LCD is, you know, just a generic LCD, but I've connected it through this Galileo board and able to run it. So what is happening here is my Galileo's talking to my shield and saying, you know, what's the temperature, what's the altitude, and what's the pressure out there, and then it's passing that information obviously off to the code, and the code's saying, okay, go ahead and print that out on the LCD that you have connected. And we have this LCD connected, and I've also added a little switch so I can make it brighter and darker nice little hack that I added, just in case, you know, you can't see it there. But yes, it's something very simple. I won't show the code, but I will make it available. You can walk through the demo that, or the blog post that Sergey put together, which steps through it step by step. It took me about 20 minutes, to be quite honest, to get everything. And that was mostly because I was having trouble wiring it more than the code. Yeah. So yeah, it's very, very neat. And I'm amazed by this. I actually use this to tell the temperature in my house every once in a while. I'm not going to lie, because I don't believe the thermostat half the time. So I just boot this up and check it out. So pretty cool, eh?
Very cool.
Yeah. I don't know how you would gamify this. I don't know, maybe put an achievement in for the lowest temperature. Something like that. I think we could kind of win that today.
Oh,
where
yeah.
we are.
That's not going to be hard with the weather we've had.
We're here in Toronto, and I think it's about -30 outside right now, so... We could definitely get that achievement. But yeah, you know, very, very cool stuff. I love the space. I think this is really, really cool. I can't wait to get a little bit deeper into it. I still think of myself as just kind of got my toe dipped into the puddle that is IoT. And I can't wait to get a little bit deeper, get more and more of these devices, and maybe build myself a little robot.
Yeah.
Kind of like something that you did.
Oh, is
yeah,
that?
I think it's about time we showed off this really cool robot that you've got.
Sure, I can do that. So... what I've got is a little guy called, called Dexter, and it's an app that I'm working on that uses, the prototype I have now uses the Lego Mindstorms NXT or EV3 kit, but the way we've built this, you can use it with any Internet thing device that you connect to via Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, and what it is we're sort of exploring mixing games and physical hardware to see what kind of fun, creative experiences we can make, and see if we can, you know, lower the barriers to learning this stuff and teach a little bit on how to build, how to work with these devices. So I'm going to boot him up. Hopefully he cooperates and
works. Demos. So much fun.
Risky to do demos in live on air. But
this is definitely the most hardware we've used in this show yet, so...
Oh, really?
Yes. Usually we're all software on this show, so...
I'm glad to be the first. So this is Dexter. So you'll notice that the first thing...
Just turn him towards the camera there so you can see him.
You got him? So the first thing you notice here is he's got a face. And, he's alive, and he blinks, and he, you know, looks at you. This is the game side of the work we're doing. This is what the user is presented with, the UI, and we build this and we animate it the same way.
Gives them some personality.
Exactly, some personality. And you can interact with them like you would any game. So we've written, you know, a small function, which I'll show you in a bit, that when you touch his face, he'll do some stuff. I don't remember what I've got there. Oh, there it is. So when you touch his face, the function we've got there basically makes him make a face and move the... right motor, apparently.
He looked just as shocked when that happened as I was. We both kind of like locked eyes there for a second.
Almost as if I planned that, you know? So he'll look shocked and then the motor will turn. So how you do that, or the other side of this really early prototype, is you program him using a block programming language that we're sort of working on. Similar to Scratch or Hopscotch, if you're familiar with that. And you just, you know, key up many different blocks for different things you want him to do. So you can react to his face being touched or his eye being poked. So say when his eye is poked, we want him to move forward and then backward and then say make a face. So right now it says idle, let's say smile. The smile is a little bit off right now just because I animated it and I'm terrible at animations. So we're just going to save that and then we'll go back to his face, and so when we poke him in the eye, I'm gonna lift it up so it doesn't run off the table. It should do forward, backward, and none of those. Yeah, there we go.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I gotta say, I love the fact that it's running a Windows Phone. I remember when you first showed this to me, that was the first thing that came into my mouth, was it's running a Windows Phone. Because, you know, I've seen people do this with, you know, different devices like Androids and stuff, but the fact that it's using a Windows Phone is really cool. Mm-hmm. Let's go a little bit deeper on the tech.
Sure.
Because we're game developers here. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, you used Unity for this?
That's right.
That's unbelievable. So what made you, first of all, what made you choose Unity? And how did you manage to implement this kind of technology inside of a game development suite?
So I used Unity because that's pretty much the software of choice for all our game development now. So when we decided to work on something like Dexter, you know, initially we thought, why switch, right? Why move away from that? Is there a reason we have to? And you know, I guess the first answer was, well, you know, is it going to let us do all the things we want to do with hardware? Is it going to let you talk to all these different devices? And it turns out it can, because Unity supports plugins, right? Mm-hmm. Which are custom pieces of code that you can write that run, that are platform specific. Mm-hmm. So we basically wrote a few plugins that allow us to, you know, do all the interaction with the Lego kits or any other IoT device. And those plugins are consumed by our Unity app.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And like, that goes back to my whole rant of, programmers are programmers, right? You're a game developer, and you saw how you could take your game development software and use it for robotics,
yeah.
Right? So that there's that intersection that I was talking about, right?
Yeah.
So moving forward, are you going to continue to use Unity, or are you guys thinking about maybe building out your own system? Or
I think in the foreseeable future, we're going to stick with Unity. We haven't really hit any roadblocks or any walls that will stop us from doing, you know, the things we want to do. It's pretty versatile, and like anything we need to do that's specific to the platform, we can just run within a plugin and consume the results in Unity.
That's pretty cool. And then it gives you the ability to do all these really cool animations and stuff. And then the gaming side of it too, right? Yeah. If you wanted to actually implement some of the more game mechanics, you could using Unity, right? Not to say that you couldn't do that in other software.
No, not
at
all.
You know, it makes it a little bit easier when you are using Unity.
And that's the part that's like most exciting for us, because you know, game developers, designers, people in the industry are really familiar with Unity.
Mm-hmm.
So when you've got a team of many people with different disciplines, you can, like, everybody works together well, because you know, you're using software that the people in there who specialize in different areas are comfortable working with, and you're still, you know, you're still able to do all the cool stuff you want to do with Internet of Things.
Devices. Yeah, that's awesome. That's really, really cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, like just taking it back, like, so you know, you started out with robotics you started out with nuclear research, I should say, right?
Robotics.
Robotics?
That was my undergrad at
okay.
school.
So what made you make the shift from that to game development and then shift back to robotics?
So I started with working with robots. My undergrad thesis was like an app that allowed inexperienced operators to, you know, remotely control a robot that was in a search and rescue scene.
Okay.
And
that must have been pretty cool.
That was really
cool.
Work
with those. Those are big robots.
Very big robots.
These are tiny robots. Those are big robots.
We actually started with one of these, just because the big robot, if you controlled it wrong, could damage things.
Oh,
so you had to train on, you had to prove that it worked on one of these things before,
the,
you
know, Fisher Price version of
exactly,
the robot. Exactly.
Before unleashing it. So doing that, one of the new things we kind of did was experiment with using a game controller to control the robot, because that's what people were most familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't know how to use, you know, the custom interfaces that come with some of these big robots. And so, you know, working with a game controller, it was just kind of a fun experience for me, trying to think of how a user would interact with my software and ways to make it easier for them. Like, that whole experience was very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to continue with that. You know, like, it was, I felt very creative. I enjoyed it. The next best thing to doing that, actually the ultimate version of that, is like making a game.
Right? Yeah.
Because you're creating the entire experience for, you know, a user that you haven't met.
And that's like, that right there is that thought pattern that I was talking about, that spark that led you down another path only because you found something enjoyable in the discipline you were doing and saw where you could take it by moving to a different discipline, right? So
yeah,
that's really cool. I love that. That's very neat.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've been doing this for a bit now. You've been building a few games. You guys got a couple of really cool games out there. Do you want to give a plug for some of your games?
Sure. I guess our the game we're most proud of right now is called Super Triclops Soccer. A little bit difficult to say, but it's a game. It's an arcade soccer game where you play as little triangles, and the AI is fierce.
Like, it's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. So you can check it out. It's on the Windows App Store. So.
Is it on all app stores or just the Windows store?
It's on all platforms.
So you can get it on iOS, Android.
iOS, Android, Windows, everywhere.
So pull your phone out of your pocket and go download that, because it is a lot of fun. Definitely a great way to spend some time on the bus or when you're waiting for something.
You can check us out, sterlinggamesinc.com.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah. So what advice would you give to a game developer or someone that wants to be a game developer, just any programmer out there thinking, you know what, this space sounds cool. What advice would you give to them to get started?
So there are a ton of tools for, you know, like across the board in terms of your skill level and comfort programming. I think the most important thing is just like start something, just make something make something very small, and then when you're done, make another thing, and make another, like, just make lots of different small games. And then when you're comfortable with, you know, making something that you're, that sort of does what you think it should do, release it. Because releasing and seeing other people play your games is probably the best way to learn how to, you know, how to get into the mind space of
getting
the game
real
developer.
Feedback getting from real feedback. Users is a huge step in your development process.
Absolutely. And people will play your games in ways you never expected ever, mm-hmm. you know. So that, I think that that's the biggest thing for me. Make lots of different games, and by different I mean like across different genres. Because if you stick with one thing for too long, you don't really, especially when you're learning.
Yeah, you become repetitive in it. You learn the mechanics as opposed to the actual underlying methods behind the programming.
Yeah, and you don't really grow in your skills or your ability. I'm a big fan of cross-disciplinary things. So
that's, yeah, obviously, yes.
So I think that's important. And then releasing and watching how people play with your games, I think that's great.
Yeah, I think that's some great advice because, honestly, that's one thing that I always tell developers. Build lots and release lots because at the end of the day, it comes down to, you know, having that experience of having users actually physically play your game, give you real feedback that you can then move on to new projects, right?
Yeah.
Very important. A lot of us just, you know, release it and forget about it and think that that's the end, and that's not the end. That's actually the beginning of the process when you first release your games. So,
great advice. And it, like you alluded to, it's very important to engage with the users because having somebody willing to play something you made and talk to you about it, I think that's great. So take advantage of all of that. And when I say release lots of games, they don't always have to be super polished. Just, you know.
Well, look at the state of early access. I don't even know if they polished them anymore. You know, it don't feel so bad. You know, when the AAAs are missing faces on their characters, don't feel so bad if your colors aren't perfect in your game. Right? So, you know, release early, release often. Great. Very good advice. Awesome. Yeah. All right, so let's wrap it up a little bit here. We've covered a lot of fun stuff. Hopefully this is kind of like giving you the spark to go out and play with some of this cool hardware and that. Next step-wise, get involved in the community. Like we said, the Maker community is really, really big and growing, very friendly, lots of really cool different, like you said, different disciplines out there that can kind of talk to you about all this cool stuff. Check out Maker Faire, which is a very popular site and kind of like a community hub, if you will, for developers. I know they have events going on around the world where they actually bring out some of these really cool devices and do like a parade and stuff of all their devices. It's very, very cool. Mm-hmm. And next step-wise, like I mentioned, I didn't want to give you a pile of links because you'd be sitting there, you know, with a notepad or having to scroll back constantly and try to find out what link did he mention. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put everything together in one single page. And you can find that at scruffyfern.com/IoT. And I'll make sure we have links to all the downloads that you need. I'll link you to Sergey's blogs that have some really, really cool content in there. Like he goes into like how to solder these stuff and everything. So very, very cool to check that out. As well as I'll connect you guys to the, you know, the Maker community and everything else. So yeah, dive in there, check it out, and if you have any links that I missed or you want to see something there, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter or email or carrier pigeon, however you want to reach out. Just let me know, and I'll add it to the list. Thank you very much. Thank you, Anomi, for visiting today and bringing Dexter. It was very, very cool, and I can't wait to hear what happens with him in the future.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Thank you very much for tuning in.